Hello there, this is Benny.
And this is Kyle.
And you are listening to The Doctor's Watcher,
the podcast where I watch Doctor Who and I tell you all about it.
Excellent, Kyle. I'm excited to hear all about it because I know you've watched Doctor Who. But before we get into that, what have you been up to?
Well, the two of us actually did something together not that long ago that I thought was kind of fun and interesting.
Yeah, did we? What was it?
We were invited by listener and friend of the pod, Natalie, to come, well, not come because this is over video, but to teach some of her students all about Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, so listener Natalie is a school teacher, and she has this like gaming guild for these kind of middle school, high school aged kids. Some of them had expressed some interest in the old Dungeons and the Dragons. And so she knew that Kyle is a big old nerd, and because she listens to this podcast, she knows I'm a big old nerd.
We may have dropped a few subtle hints on the podcast that we are familiar with Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, if you have listened to any other episodes of this podcast, you know what we're talking about. She invited us over to tell these kids about D&D.
Yeah, so I thought that was pretty fun. We put together this whole PowerPoint for them, and they seemed pretty excited about things. So,
yeah, hopefully they seemed like a good bunch of kids.
Yeah.
I'm always worried around teenagers. I'm always worried they're going to point and laugh or something. But no, they were really, really fun. And they seemed to get into the idea of playing D&D, which I'm happy to see.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I was mentioning it on one of my Discords beforehand. And somebody else was like, oh, middle schoolers, they'll like mock you mercilessly. But yeah, I didn't really feel like that happened, so...
Well, I wasn't reading everything they were saying in the chat, I didn't notice any of it either.
So yeah, hopefully that gaming guild is getting off the ground and getting prepped for a fun adventure.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Ooh, I just saw beans in your background for a moment.
Yeah, he did his little cryptid thing walking by. The door's open. He could come in and hang out, but so far he has declined to do so. All right. Anything else that you've been doing in the meantime since the last time we recorded?
I'm trying to think if there's anything notable and not coming up with anything, so...
Cool.
Hopefully I'll think of something before the next episode we record after this one.
All right. Well, on that note, shall we get started?
Let's do it. So this is the 34th episode of season 3, Holiday for the Doctor.
He just had a holiday. Most of that cereal was Doctor being invisible / intangible / unable to talk, and William Hartnell kind of not having much to do.
Yeah, I was going to say he took like half the cereal off, but really it was more than half. It was like the majority of the cereal. This, of course, is the first episode of a new serial.
Mm-hmm.
This serial is directed by Rex Tucker.
Wow, what a name. That sounds right? Like, I don't know, some sort of pulp action hero.
So what I read is that this was the only Doctor Who serial that he directed, but he was apparently... pretty heavily involved in like the very early production of Doctor Who. He, I guess, sort of served...
Even earlier than this? Because we're only on season 3 here, Kyle.
Yeah, apparently he served as sort of a caretaker or like interim producer in like the pre-production phases, even before they hired Verity Lambert as the first official producer.
Oh, whoa. Yeah, that is early.
So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And the serial is written by Donald Cotton.
Donald Cotton. That name sounds new.
It is almost new. He has written one serial before this, which was The Mythmakers.
Okay, yeah, that was a fun one. The Trojan War type of thing.
Apparently this was the last serial that he wrote.
Oh, well, we're at 2 out of 2 then, I guess.
Uh-huh. I read that he did either write or pitch or develop or whatever a third serial, but it was rejected by Innes Lloyd.
Oh, dang. All right. So are we going to stick to our tradition of you not telling me the name of the serial yet?
Yeah, I think I'll hold it till the end of the episode.
Okay, cool. So Kyle, brand new serial. I don't know how much of it they've still got, so won't you tell us? How'd you watch it?
So this episode I watched on BritBox.
Hooray! And if it's on BritBox, that means the whole serial's on BritBox.
It does indeed.
Oh, lovely.
I found this Doctor Who website called Lovarzi that had a post, like a blog-style post, basically, that lists where various missing episodes were found.
Oh, I love this.
And, I have no idea if anything in this post is actually accurate or not.
I'm going to pretend it's 100% accurate. And the more far-fetched it is, the more accurate it's going to be to me.
Well, this one actually just said that the serial was apparently never destroyed by the BBC. So it was never lost in the first place, apparently.
Oh, interesting. All right. Well, cool. Thought that story was going to be a little longer. Possibly more interesting, if I'm being honest. But, you got to have some of these, too.
Do you recall what Arcliffe Dingler was?
I don't. I do not. I haven't edited the previous one yet. As I was doing chores around the house earlier today, knowing that I had this Dr. Watcher coming up, I was trying to remember what had happened, and I sort of seemed to vaguely recall / dredge up from my memory / make up something about there being something wrong with the TARDIS, like it ran out of power, had some sort of power outage or something like that. But I don't know if I just like dreamed that, or anyway, Kyle, why don't you tell us what actually happened?
So the previous serial, of course, was The Celestial Toymaker. And one of the characters in that serial was Cyrus the Schoolboy.
Yes.
And you may recall that he had given Dodo a bag of candy. And
I remember telling her not to eat it.
And so the last few moments of the episode after they've escaped the Toymaker and everything is the Doctor taking one of those candies and popping it at his mouth and biting down and then shouting out in pain.
Oh, no, now that you say that, now I do remember that, yeah.
So this episode, it does not actually remind us of that Cliff Dingler at all.
It just starts with him in the dentist's office.
It does just start, but it does not start in a dentist's office. As far as I can remember, it's the first episode of Doctor Who that starts with a song.
Oh, well, fun.
So the camera is behind like a wagon wheel, basically, and it's kind of looking across this, sort of Wild Westy set. And there's a sign in the background, sort of at the opposite end of the set, that says, OK, Corral.
OK.
And We hear this, you know, like old-fashioned plinkety-plinkety style piano.
Excellent.
While this woman's voice sings,
"So fill up your glasses and join in the song. The law's right behind you, and it won't take long. So come, you coyotes, and howl at the moon till there's blood upon the sawdust in the last chance saloon."
Oh shit! I mean, that was doing a pretty good job of, like, you know, attracting customers until the end there. I'd be like, wait a second. We go to the next place over.
What was that last line there?
What do you have in your sawdust? just a little spilled beer and whiskey. All right, well,
some peanut shells. So as the song finishes, three cowboys ride into the scene on horses.
I already love the fact that these are all 100% guaranteed to be genuine, you know, UK born and bred British boys
doing absolutely. What is,
I'm hoping will be fantastic American cowboy accents.
So they ride in. One of them shoots his gun at the OK Corral sign.
The way you do, you know.
Sure. I think the sign also says Tombstone on it. Like, Tombstone OK Corral is, like, it's the name of the town they're in.
All right.
So these cowboys talk to each other in, as you said, impeccable fake American British accents.
I love it.
About how not scared they are and how they need to head to the Last Chance Saloon where they're supposed to meet up with Seth Harper.
Very cool. All right. Well, I wish I knew the names of everyone involved in the gunfight at the OK Corral. I feel like I've read the Wikipedia page possibly multiple times, but I can't remember all the names, but I'll stay tuned to see what happens to these guys.
Yeah, as I recall, when I read the Wikipedia page a while ago, basically a lot of what the Wikipedia page talks about is how most of the media depictions of the shootout are wrong in several various ways.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's always fun.
Yep.
So they head toward the saloon. The woman's voice sings a few more lines of the song. And as she finishes this, you know, next little bit of the song, the camera pans over to a barn door that has the words "livery and feed store" painted on it. And cool. We hear TARDIS noises.
Excellent.
Just in case you're starting to wonder if we are watching the right show.
Well, yep, good to know that they remembered to put our heroes in this one.
So the interior of the livery and feed store is pretty cluttered and messy. There's, like, barrels and wagon wheels and piles of hay and shit. And there's also a TARDIS, which the doctor...
That one just came in.
The doctor exits from it. He's holding his hand up to his face, you know, like the side of his cheek or whatever, his jaw.
Yeah, the universal sign of "I have a sore tooth."
Right. Stephen and Dodo follow him out, and they, you know, they wonder if there are any painkillers aboard the TARDIS that the doctor could take, but he says that his tooth has to come out.
Oh, well, I'm sure they'll have some barber nearby who can grab it with a pair of or, you know, maybe a blacksmith or something. Who did the tooth extraction in this period of history?
I feel like it was barbers.
Sure, yeah, yeah. I mean, maybe the blacksmith can hold you down.
yeah, that would probably help. Steven and Dodo start looking around. They want to try to figure out when and where they are. And, you know, it's not long before they see the Tombstone OK Corral sign outside. And they figure out that they're in the Wild West.
So, out of curiosity, is this like a studio set where we are? Do we have like a nice big matte painting in the back of, I don't know, some hills or something, the rolling plains of the Old West, maybe some cactuses?
You know, I wasn't looking at the background too closely in this one, but I think it was pretty much all studio set.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, so there were probably some paintings in the background.
Yeah.
Look, I've always wanted to be a cowboy, see what it was like in the Wild West.
Hey, they had cowgirls too, didn't they?
Yes.
Yahoo!
What about my tooth? Mm?
I remember his ancestor having quite a cowboy hat.
Uh-huh. So the voice sings a few more lines of the song, and we cut to the interior of the Last Chance Saloon. I should clarify that this voice that's singing the song is not actually somebody performing at the saloon.
Okay.
It's not diegetic at all. It's just purely for us viewers.
Sure. Why not?
Inside the saloon, the cowboys arrive. They meet up with a couple other guys, and they start talking about how, you know, they're all going to back each other up and gun somebody down.
Mm-hmm.
Over at the livery stable, Dodo and Steven reemerge from the TARDIS in period costumes.
Excellent. Please describe.
So I think that they think they're fitting in, and they're definitely trying to fit in, but it's basically, you know, like people wearing like super fancy Hollywood cowboy costumes with, you know, like all the fringe and like fancy leather, and like Dodo's in like this nice dress and it's all embroidered and everything. So
I love it.
You know, they look really great, actually, but but they're definitely in like fancy cowboy costumes, as opposed to all the other characters we've seen who actually do look, you know, like cowboys.
Or a reasonable facsimile, as they could do on a BBC budget.
Right. I did want to give a quick call out to the costumer of the serial, Daphne Dare, who has actually been the main costumer on basically everything we've seen the whole series. So
very cool.
Shout out to Daphne Dare.
Shout out to Daphne.
The doctor complains about how they don't seem able to be inconspicuous like he is.
How inconspicuous is he?
Dodo gives him a nice black cowboy hat to wear.
Oh, fantastic.
Steven starts practicing his Old West accent.
I can't wait to hear it.
I was just practicing my quick draw.
Oh, do be careful, dear boy. And remember, that belongs to my favorite collection.
Now, see here, stranger. I reckon you don't know who I is. Deadeye Steve. The fastest. Meanest gun in the West.
I think you're smashing.
He also starts playing with his gun, demonstrating both poor gun safety and poor gun handling skills.
I'm sure that's not going to cause problems down the line.
Uh-huh. Before long, his gun is actually shot out of his hand.
Oh, dang. By who?
By a stranger who's just appeared in the livery stable. It's a man with a great curly mustache and a star pinned to his chest.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that his initials may be W.E.
You are correct.
Hey.
He introduces himself as the Marshal of Tombstone, Wyatt Earp.
I had a feeling.
And he invites them to accompany him to the sheriff's office.
Cool. I mean, you know, he would.
Uh-huh. Stephen basically starts explaining to him that he's not really a gunman. And Wyatt Earp's like, yeah, clearly, that's why I'm saving your asses by taking you in.
Yeah.
He explains to them that the Clantons are in town.
And boy, that's mighty unhealthy for a stranger that calls himself the fastest gun in town. Now, pick up your pea shooter and let's get moving.
I love it.
Hey, folks, isn't this a good podcast? If you like what you hear, let us know. You can do that on social media or by email, or by leaving a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Another thing you can do if you like this show is let your friends know. Word of mouth is the best way for us to get new listeners. And now, back to the show. So, I'm probably going to stop mentioning like every single time that this happens, but you can pretty much assume that whenever we change scenes, we hear a few more bars of the Last Chance Saloon song again.
And it just gets worse every time.
Uh-huh.
Come on down. We got the best stuff that can be bought. And if you're lucky, you might not even get shot.
Nice. So in the saloon, this, you know, Old West barmaid type woman enters the room.
Cool. Can't wait to ship her with one of our three characters. Let's find out what her name is so we can start combining them.
Well, we don't find out her name for a little bit, unfortunately. Okay. But
I'll hold my horses, partner. Wink as I tip my hat.
Nice. So she enters the room. She basically just kind of like stands at the back and observes as the various men all assembled there all talk about how none of them have ever actually seen Doc Holliday before, but they should know him when they see them because of the descriptions they've gotten.
I wonder how much those descriptions resemble Stephen or possibly the doctor.
So they don't, you know, they're looking for Doc Holliday. They don't specifically know where he is, but they heard that he just got to town this morning, and it's well known that he's really into gambling and drinking, so they figure if they just, like, hang out at the saloon, he'll probably show up at some point.
All right, that sounds like a plan. I'm trying to remember how much card playing Stephen did when they were hanging out with the Huguenots.
Oh, yeah.
Or Huguenots. Yeah, those guys.
At this point, the barmaid-type woman leaves. She tells the bartender that she'll be right back. And she heads down the street to the place where Doc Holliday is setting up his new dentist's office.
Oh, yeah, I think I do remember hearing that he was a dentist at one point.
And she warns him that, you know, there are men waiting for him at the saloon, basically.
Yeah. And how much does he look like Stephen, would you say?
Not much, actually. He's definitely closer to the doctor.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Kyle says with a mischievous look in his eye.
Well, it was a guy called Seth Hall. Then there's three brothers named Clanton.
Clanton? You kill a guy out of sheer professional ethics, and then you've got three of his brothers chasing after you to leave with it once. That makes me real angry.
I love it.
She tries telling him to leave town, but he refuses.
The day I can't walk down Main Street of any city in the West on account it ain't safe, then I'll be dead.
Well, careful what you wish for.
Yeah, it's like, I think that's what the Clantons are thinking too, buddy. They confirm to us viewers that they are engaged to be married.
Oh, congratulations.
Her name is Kate, I should mention. I don't remember if we learn it now or later, but now that we know, like, the canonical ship.
Yeah, yeah. Holicate? Kate-a-day?
I kind of like Holicate.
Cool.
So, you know, they're kind of having a little romantic moment when they get interrupted by Sheriff's Deputy Bat Masterson.
Cool.
Who basically tells them that he's keeping his eye on him and that Doc Holliday better stay away from the saloon and don't play poker.
I feel like we're getting sort of an Old West greatest hits. I don't at this moment recall seeing Bat Masterson's name on the Wikipedia page for the shootout at the OK Corral, but it was a while since I read it, so I don't know. I couldn't swear to that in a court of law.
Holiday's basically like, cool, cool, cool. I'm here to be a totally above board citizen and do dentistry, so that's all good.
Sounds legit. I believe him.
Uh-huh. So he and Kate leave, and then Wyatt Earp shows up with the doctor and Dodo and Steven in tow. Bat asks Wyatt about them, like who they are and whatever. But before Wyatt can really say anything, the doctor introduces them all.
Allow me, sir, to introduce Miss Dodo Dupont, Wizard of the Ivory Keys, and Stephen Regret Tenor, and lastly, sir, your humble servant, Dr. Caligari. Mm.
Doctor who?
Yes, you're quite right.
Nice. Was that our very first Doctor Who?
You know, I feel like we might have had one or two before, but it's been very rare.
Listeners, if you know, or, you know, Google it and then tell us. Also, I hope that Dodo can actually play piano and Steven can actually sing, because the doctor's writing some checks here.
Yeah, writing some checks that he's not going to be the one to have to cash.
Yep.
So Wyatt Earp and Bat Masterson basically tell the doctor that he should just move on because Tombstone doesn't have a theater. But the doctor says that the real reason he's in town is to see a dentist. So, of course, they send him to Doc Holliday's shop just down the street.
Cool, cool.
Outside the dentist's office, the doctor informs Stephen and Dodo that they're going to leave Tombstone the next morning. He starts to say that maybe he's actually kind of feeling better and maybe he doesn't really need to see the dentist. Mm. You know, it's pretty clear that, like, he's just starting to have second thoughts about seeing, like, the Wild West dentist, which, fair.
Yeah.
But Stephen and Dodo basically, like, talk him into going through with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he heads into the office while the two of them head off to go book rooms at the hotel.
Very cool.
The camera operator follows the doctor into the dentist's office, which has, you know, like an operating chair and tray of old-fashioned dental equipment, but no people.
Hmm.
The doctor, you know, doesn't really roll an investigation check. He just kind of like glances around the room and is like, well, okay, guess that's that, and is about to leave. But then the DM's like, no, dude, roll another constitution check. And of course, his mouth starts hurting again. And
oh, dear.
Yeah.
Gonna have to pull it out yourself there, Doc.
So he actually does roll an investigation check this time and ends up looking into the back room where he finds Doc Holliday with Kate in his lap.
Oh, this is a children's show.
I gotta get me back.
Forgive me, sir. I should have not.
Doing a little dental work there, doctor.
Uh-huh. An oral examination, perhaps?
groan. Listeners, I think by now you know we will not leave any obvious joke alone.
So the doctor explains that he has a toothache, and Kate's like, oh, awesome, our first customer.
That inspires confidence.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the doctor starts trying to leave again, but of course now Doc Holliday and Kate won't let him. They basically take him over to the operating chair and sit him down. And Kate wants to watch, but Doc Holliday...
Oh, nice.
Uh-huh. Doc Holliday reminds her that she can't stand the sight of blood, so he sends her to the other room.
He's like, there's going to be geysers up here. The doctor's like, geysers?
Yeah, it's so going to be gushing.
Yeah.
So the doctor opens his mouth. Doc Holliday looks in and he's like, yep, cool, cool, cool. And he grabs his forceps off of his tray of old-fashioned dental equipment.
Shouldn't the doctor, like, indicate which tooth is hurting first before the forceps get involved?
I think he told him, like, the area, and then when Doc Holliday looked in, it was just pretty obvious.
Okay.
Like, what the problem tooth was. The doctor asks for some anesthetic or something to dull the pain. And
he gets a bottle of whiskey.
Well, that's actually the second offer that Doc Holliday makes. First, he offers to basically, like, knock him on the head with his pistol.
Yeah, the preferred method of anesthesia in the Old West.
He does then offer him some booze. The doctor turns both of these down. So Doc Holliday...
Well, if I had to pick between those two, I know which one I'd go for.
Doc Holliday has the shot of booze himself and then reaches into the doctor's mouth with his forceps as the camera cuts away and we hear a few more lines of the song.
Gotta admit, this is not shaping up to be the funnest holiday for the doctor. Oh, I get it. Doc Holliday. Holiday for the doctor. Okay.
So back at the saloon, these men who are waiting for Doc Holliday, the Clantons and their friend Seth Harper, they're starting to get antsy. One of them shoots a bottle of booze, I guess, basically just for fun to help pass the time.
Sure, why not?
And then Stephen and Dodo show up at the saloon. They tell the bartender that they need to rent 3 rooms. They have a friend who's joining them later. So he takes their names and occupations down in the register and basically offers them a job when he sees that they're a pianist and a singer.
I like how they just went with it. Like, the doctor's not there. Uh-huh. They could have made up something new, but I don't know, maybe word would have gotten around and people would have started getting suspicious.
I might just be able to offer you a job, is all. I got no pianist on account he was shot last week. And I do have a singer, but she's always out someplace. Understand?
Well, with an offer like that, how could I say no?
You know, they sometimes say that in a job interview, it's a good idea to ask, like, why the previous person quit or, you know, why this position's open. And, yeah, got shot last week. It's a pretty good reason for the position to be open.
The guy just offered it.
So they leave the doctor's room key at the bar for him. You know, tell the bartender to hold it for him and whatever.
Sure.
and the Clantons hear them refer to the doctor. And of course, they assume that that means Doc Holliday.
Love it.
So the guy who's sort of like the main Clanton brother, the head Clanton brother.
What were the names? Would that be Ike Clanton? I think one of them was named Ike.
I think Ike is the name I read in the transcript, actually.
Cool.
I was going
to
say.
Let's go with that then. You don't have to check. Let's just assume I'm right.
the Mario of the Clantons.
Nice.
So he sends one guy like out into the town to look for Doc Holliday and actually bring him in instead of just waiting for him to show up. And he sends another guy upstairs to bring Steven down, but keep it friendly.
Okay. I mean, I guess they assume that these guys are traveling with Doc Holliday or something like that. So
yeah,
they must be his friends or something.
Yeah. And Steven's wearing a couple of guns. So
sure.
Ike, I guess, is, you know, rightly worried that when he's confronting Doc Holliday, Doc Holliday's partner, Steven Rigret, the tenor, is going to like shoot him in the back, basically.
Gotcha.
So he wants Steven like down here where we can see him and be in control of him, essentially.
Yeah.
Back at the dentist's office, Doc Holliday is holding a tooth in his forceps.
Wow, what special effects. We know that came out of the doctor's mouth. Nah, I mean, like, not that we wanted to see him, like, rooting around in the doctor's mouth and pulling out a tooth.
The doctor asks what he owes, and Holliday says that it's on the house on account of him being the first customer.
Aw.
He takes the tooth into the back room to give to Kate as a souvenir.
Oh, wow. I mean, she hates blood, and normally when you pull a tooth, it's still got some, like, blood on it. But sure. I mean, I assume it's just like this nice gleaming white clean tooth.
Yeah, pretty much. Didn't actually look, you know, diseased or broken or injured at all.
Yeah.
So while Doc Holliday is in the back room with Kate, Seth Harper shows up from the saloon.
Doc.
Yes. What is it?
Holliday.
Holiday? Yes, I suppose so. Yes, you could call it that.
Man, come on, Doctor.
So Seth Harper invites the doctor back to the saloon to have some drinks and basically tells him that he has 5 minutes to show up or they'll come looking for him.
The doctor's like, wow, they must really want to hang out with me.
Pretty much, yeah. That's exactly how he takes it.
I love it.
Seth Harper leaves. Kate and Doc Holliday come out from the back room. Doctor's like, oh, that young fellow is so nice and blah, blah, blah. And Holliday tells the doctor that he's not dressed for a party. He should be wearing a gun.
Very cool. I mean, not that we favor firearms or gun violence here at the Doctor's Watcher, but I don't know. Cowboys, especially the doctor as a cowboy.
Yeah.
That's got something to it.
The doctor, of course, doesn't want a gun. You know, he theoretically doesn't kill anyone except for cavemen in 10,000 BC.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when you think about it, bullets are kind of like just very small rocks that you would bash someone in the head with.
It's the same idea. So he doesn't want a gun, but Holliday tells him that he can borrow his. And, you know, Doc Holliday's gun is basically forced onto the doctor. Kate, like, straps the holster around the doctor's waist. Doc Holliday, like, puts the gun into the doctor's hands.
Whoa.
And
like this little thruple that we got going on here.
He shows him how this gun has Doc Holliday's name, like, engraved on it, basically.
I was even going to ask something along those lines.
And he's like, yeah, you know, so you can just like return it to me when you leave town.
Love it.
And he basically just like shoves the doctor out of the dentist's office to be on his way and head to the saloon.
Good times.
Back at the saloon, Seth Harper tells the Clanton boys that Holiday will be here in 5 minutes. And then Luigi Clanton comes downstairs with Dodo and Steven, and the Clantons tell them to do a song, basically.
I feel like this is going to end with them shooting at their feet to make them dance.
Uh-huh. Steven tries to say that they're out of practice, and the Clantons are like, oh, cool, cool, cool. Here's your chance to warm up then.
Yeah, come. You guys knew this was going to happen.
Yeah. Steven continues trying to protest until the Clantons all draw their guns.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, Steven would rather avoid the scene of them all shooting at his feet while they try to dance.
Yep.
So the Clantons take Steven's guns from him, and they sit Dodo down at the piano. She, you know, looks around the piano for a moment and finds some sheet music for the Ballad of the Last Chance Saloon.
Oh, that's handy. That's the song I've been hearing this whole time.
It is indeed. So she's getting ready to play. Before the song starts, one of the Clantons tells the others to watch the door and to basically blast Holiday as soon as he arrives.
Nice. And then the words on the screen say...
Oh, not quite yet.
Okay.
Yeah, he cues Steven and Dodo, and she starts playing, and Steven starts singing.
But earlier we heard a woman's voice singing the song, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but now it's Steven singing, and he's singing it like quite a bit faster than we've heard it throughout the episode. But it's the same song.
He's a little more stressed.
So he sings. While we hear the song, the camera cuts back and forth a few times between the saloon interior and the doctor slowly walking down the street, black cowboy hat on his head, with Doc Holliday's gun. He's still kind of holding a handkerchief up to his mouth.
Oh, with blood on it? Because Doc Holliday famously had tuberculosis?
Oh, I didn't know that, but yeah, probably.
Well, you've never seen the one where he's Val Kilmer? Tombstone?
I don't think I did, actually. I should watch that.
All right, that's a classic.
And yeah, so Steven basically sings and the doctor walks down the street until the words, next episode, don't shoot the pianist, appear on screen.
Signed, Stephen. Well, cool. This is fun. You know, I think it was inevitable we'd end up in the Old West.
Yeah.
I think in the you know, this time period when Doctor Who was being made, people were still really into Westerns. So, yeah, here we are. And if you're going to do a Western, you might as well do Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday and throw in Bat Masterson. Why not?
Yeah, for sure.
He can be here too.
So one funny thing, I'm not sure if this is going to actually make it into any of my episode notes in this serial or not, so I'll just say it now, is that the doctor keeps, I guess I would call it mispronouncing his name, and like, this is not William Hartnell making a mistake. I think this is in the script. But the doctor keeps calling him Mr. Werp.
I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Oh, I gotta remember to call him Mr. Werp in the next episode then. Well, cool. All right. We'll see. We know Steven can't handle a gun, but maybe the doctor knows his way around. And what do they call it in the Old West? An iron?
That sounds like it could be right.
Something, I don't know.
Six iron, something like that.
I mean, I don't know if that's a golf thing, but I don't play golf or shoot guns. So. Uh-huh. All right, Kyle, what other notes do you have for us?
So the other note that I have is just a brief mention that it apparently was not Jackie Lane playing the piano, which, you know, we never actually saw, like, the hands that were playing. We just saw, like, Dodo sitting at the piano and acting like it with her hands not visible. So that was not a huge surprise.
Yeah.
But it was Peter Purves actually singing.
Oh, nice. How do you do?
Not bad.
Cool.
Probably about as good as I did at the top of the episode.
Voice like an angel, then. All right, well, Kyle, thank you for watching Doctor Who and telling me all about it.
Indeed, and thank you for listening to me talk all about Doctor Who.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to me and listening to Kyle talk about Doctor Who. We'd love to hear from you. Please feel free to email us at thedoctorswatcher@gmail.com or check us out on social media. There's that site, I think they changed it to like K or J or whatever.
We're
at Doctor Watcher. You'll figure it out.
Indeed.
Shout out to Circuit 23 for the awesome theme song that he made for us. You can check him out on Bandcamp and SoundCloud or email him at circuit.23@gmail.com to tell him how much you love bopping to that awesome tune.
And join us in 2 more weeks to find out if they shoot the pianist.
That's right.
Oh, I guess I should say the name of the serial. It's The Gunfighters.
Okay, I had a feeling it would be something like that. Cool. All right, listeners, see you then.
Bye.
Their fingers and bells on their toes. The girls come to Tombstone in their high silk hose. They'll dance on the tables or give you a tune for whatever's in your wallet at the last chance. It's your last chance of giving. It's your last chance of life. It's your last chance of living and your last chance to die. It's your last chance of boozing when there's no one to buy. It's your last chance of losing and the first place you find. 4 days ride from the station and you're leaving at noon. Then your one consolation is the last chance of losing.